All right, so welcome. We're diving deep into the book of Jonah,
Ooh, Jonah.
a story everybody kind of thinks they know,
Right.
but I think we're going to learn some new stuff today.
Absolutely.
We're going to be talking about some of the insights from Dr. Marv Wilson, who's a scholar of the Old Testament prophets,
Yeah.
and specifically about Jonah, who you might think of as like
Yeah.
the guy who got swallowed by a whale, but
Right.
oh, there's so much more.
It's so much more than that.
So much more to the story.
Yeah, the whale is like a blip on the radar
Yeah,
screen.
we're going to talk about ancient cultures.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about seafaring adventures.
That's right.
We're going to talk about what happens when God chooses a very reluctant prophet, right?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about Jonah is it's during a time of intense political tension.
Oh, okay.
It's the 8th century BC,
Okay.
and the Assyrian Empire is rising.
Like a superpower.
Yeah, exactly, a rising superpower. And their capital, Nineveh, had a reputation for cruelty.
Okay.
Even other prophets, like Nahum,
Yeah.
described Nineveh as a city just drenched in violence,
Oh, wow.
and where the leaders actually bragged about their brutality.
Oh,
And so
Jives.
Jonah, as a prophet living in this world,
Okay.
would have seen the Assyrians as a direct threat to his own people.
That's a lot to deal with. And
Yeah.
you've got like this
Yeah.
ruthless empire breathing down your neck.
Absolutely. And that's what I think makes this story so compelling.
Okay.
Because Jonah is, I mean, I think he's really relatable,
Okay.
even thousands of years later.
Yeah.
Because he's not some superhuman prophet.
Right.
He struggles with what God's asking him to do, especially when it comes to the Assyrians, you
Well,
know.
yeah, especially if he's got this nationalistic
Right.
feeling going on.
What
I
do you
just
mean?
want these people to be saved.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's just like when you know what you're supposed to do, but everything in you is like, no way.
Yes, we've all been there.
We all know that feeling.
That,
Yeah.
yes. Yeah, and what I think is interesting too about this is you think of prophets as these
Right.
sort of superhuman kind of figures,
Right.
but Dr. Wilson was pointing out that even in some of the key figures who appear in the New Testament
Right.
have some, let's say, colorful reputations in the
Yes.
Old Testament.
That's right.
God's not choosing perfect
He's
people.
not choosing perfect
He's
people.
using flawed
Yeah,
individuals.
flawed
And
individuals.
Jonah's a prime example.
Right.
Yeah. It's a reminder that God can use anyone,
Yeah.
regardless of their past or their struggles.
And Jonah, his struggle is really tied up in his,
Yeah.
you know, identity.
Totally.
He
Yeah.
is a Hebrew prophet. He is
Yeah.
connected to,
Yeah.
you know, his people and their beliefs.
Right. And the Assyrians, with their brutal ways and their pagan gods,
Yeah.
represented everything he opposed.
Okay, so
Yeah.
the stage is set. You've got
Right.
this prophet, and God says to him, go to Nineveh, right? This enemy's capital. Go to the enemy's capital and preach repentance.
Oh, man.
Talk about a tough assignment.
That's like the worst
Yeah.
possible assignment.
Yeah. And what does Jonah do?
Well, he runs away.
He heads for the hills,
Yeah.
or in this case, the high seas,
Heads for the high seas.
tries to run as far away from God's mission as possible.
So where does he go?
His destination is Tarshish,
Okay.
which, you know, historians believe was a Phoenician mining colony
Okay.
way out in modern day Spain.
Okay, so that's a hike.
Yeah, that's not a weekend getaway.
Not just like popping over to the next
No,
town.
no, no. We're talking a serious journey here.
Okay.
And to get there, he would have had to board a ship of Tarshish,
Ship of Tarshish.
which became a phrase that was synonymous with just the biggest, most impressive cargo ships of an ancient world.
Wow.
And these ships were built and sailed by the Phoenicians,
Okay.
who were the master mariners of their time.
So they knew what they were doing.
Oh, yeah, they were incredibly skilled.
Okay.
They even used monkeys as lookouts on their ships.
Monkeys!
Monkeys.
It's like, what?
Yeah. Could you imagine?
How does that even work?
I mean, think
Like
about it.
up in the crow's nest or whatever they
Yeah, up
had?
on the mast, scanning the horizon for land or other ships or whatever.
Just like casually eating a banana and.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a scene straight out of a movie.
That's
It
wild.
really gives you a sense of what ancient seafaring was like.
Yeah.
This incredible blend of skill and, you know, maybe a little bit of whimsy.
Yeah, I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, it's one of those little historical tidbits that just sticks with you.
So he's onward ship, he's sailing away, thinks he's gotten away,
Right.
and then
Yeah, just as Jonah thinks he's escaped his problems, what
something
happens?
bad happened.
That's a bad happens,
Because
but
it's a story.
of
It's not going
course,
to be that easy.
a massive storm hits.
Oh no.
And this is where things get really interesting because the sailors on board
Okay.
are polytheistic,
Meaning.
meaning they believed in many gods,
Okay.
And so they immediately think that they've angered one of the gods.
Makes sense.
Maybe a storm god like Baal.
Oh, right, right, right.
And so they start casting lots.
What is casting lots?
Basically, it's like throwing dice.
Okay.
To try to figure out
right.
who's responsible for bringing this divine wrath upon them.
Okay, so who is?
And guess who the unlucky winner turns out to be?
Jonah.
Jonah.
Of course it is.
They find him hiding the low deck, sound asleep.
While everybody else is like...
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine the scene?
Kinetic dance.
These sailors are battling for their lives against a raging storm.
Yeah.
And Jonah's down below catching some Z's.
Oh, man.
They're baffled.
Yeah.
They confront him. Like, don't you pray to your God in a storm.
Shouldn't you be up here with us?
Right. Aren't you worried?
Helping us bail water.
Exactly. But Jonah is forced to confess that he's the reason for the tempest.
Yeah.
He tells him to toss him overboard.
Oh, no.
It's like a showdown between Jonah's faith in the one true God and the sailor's belief in a whole pantheon of deities.
And it's all playing out on the high seas.
With this raging storm as the backdrop.
This is intense.
It's high drama.
Yeah.
And it really sets the stage for what happens next.
Okay. Well, we'll have to wait until next time to find out what happens.
That's right.
Because it's just part one.
We'll pick up the story next time.
That was our deep dive.
With Jonah and the storm and the high seas.
Yeah.
And all the drama.
Stay tuned. Okay, so last time we left Jonah.
Plunging into the sea.
Yeah, taking the swim.
Yeah, not exactly by choice.
Not exactly a planned vacation.
No, definitely not.
It's so interesting, though, how this scene
really
shows this clash.
Oh, absolutely.
Between these worldviews, you know?
Totally different worldview.
You've got the sailors, like...
With their nature gods and their belief that they have to appease these gods.
Yeah, like a quid pro quo.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you do something for the gods, they do something for you.
Right, right, right.
But then you have Jonah, who believes in a god who's above and beyond nature.
Yeah, who created those gods.
Right, exactly. The creator god, Yahweh.
And it's like, it's all playing out.
It's a battle of the gods.
Right there.
Yeah, and that's a theme that runs throughout the Old Testament.
Okay.
It's not just about a storm at sea.
Right.
It's about Yahweh, the God of Israel, proving himself to be more powerful than the gods of the surrounding cultures.
And sometimes in interesting ways, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like,
Well, I mean, even in the Hebrew text, there's this wordplay that emphasizes this.
Okay.
So, you know, the sailors are, they're digging in their oars.
Yeah, to, like, fight against the storm.
Yeah, exactly. They're fighting against the storm.
Yeah.
And that same verb, dig in,
it's
used in the book of Amos.
Okay.
To describe people trying to hide from God's judgment.
Oh, wow.
So it's like the author is making this connection.
That's interesting.
There's no escaping God's presence, no matter how hard you try.
So Jonah's in the water.
Overboard.
Do the sailors, like, survive this? Or?
Well, I mean, the moment Jonah hits the water, the sea becomes calm.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the sailors are, I mean, they're completely awestruck.
Like, what just happened?
Yeah, exactly. They're like, what kind of power is this?
Right.
And they start offering sacrifices to the God of Israel.
Oh, wow.
Acknowledging his superiority over their own God.
They get it.
They get it.
Okay.
But Jonah's story doesn't end there.
Right, because he gets swallowed.
He gets swallowed by a great fish.
Yeah, the whale.
Quote, unquote.
That's the part everyone remembers.
Yeah.
But it's important to note that the Hebrew text doesn't specifically say whale.
Oh, okay.
It just says a great fish.
Okay, so could be anything.
Could be anything, right.
So could someone really survive inside? Right, that's the question.
A whale or shark or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Wilson reminds us that we shouldn't get too caught up in the literal details of the story.
Okay.
I mean, the point isn't about marine biology.
Right.
It's about God's power.
And his ability to work through anything.
Exactly.
But still, like, the idea of someone being swallowed by a giant sea creature.
It's a wild image.
And surviving
is
pretty crazy.
And there are these stories, like Dr. Wilson mentioned a story about a sailor named James Bartley.
James Bartley.
Who was supposedly swallowed by a sperm whale.
Okay.
In 1891.
Okay.
And lived to tell the tale.
What?
Yeah, there was this account.
Okay.
It was published in the Princeton Theological Review.
Okay.
And it described how Bartley was found unconscious inside the whale's stomach.
No way.
His skin was bleached white from the gastric juices.
Oh, my God.
But he was alive.
That's insane.
It's a fascinating story.
Yeah.
Even if some details might be exaggerated over time.
Yeah, I'm sure they were.
But it captures the imagination.
Yeah, it really does.
And it speaks to this... I don't know, this sense of wonder
right.
that we have about the natural world.
So whether it's a whale or some other giant sea creature,
yeah.
Jonah finds himself in a pretty dark and uncomfortable place.
Yeah, no kidding.
So what does he do?
Well, what happens next is one of the most powerful moments in the whole book.
Okay.
From inside the belly of the fish, Jonah cries out to God in prayer.
Okay.
And this prayer, which is recorded in chapter 2,
okay.
is incredibly moving.
Okay.
It's filled with imagery and language
okay.
drawn from the myths and legends of Jonah's time.
Oh, interesting.
Particularly the Babylonian creation myth.
So even in this moment of like
yeah.
extreme crisis, you know, yeah. he's drawing on these.
He's drawing on the shared cultural stories of his world.
Yeah, it makes me think about how we all do that, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
We use these stories and symbols. Yeah. To try to make sense.
To make sense of our experiences.
Yeah. Especially when we're going through something difficult.
Especially when things are tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's fascinating is how Jonah uses these familiar images.
Okay.
To express his growing understanding of God's power and sovereignty.
So he's like learning through this.
He's learning through this ordeal.
Okay.
He acknowledges his rebellion against God.
Okay.
He begs for mercy.
Okay.
It's a raw, honest expression.
So does God listen?
He does.
Okay, good.
The text tells us that God commanded the fish to vomit Jonah out onto dry land.
Okay, so he doesn't have to swim out.
No, no swimming required.
Okay, good.
It's a pretty graphic image.
Yeah.
But it drives home the point.
Okay.
God has power over nature.
Yeah.
He can deliver anyone.
Even a prophet who's trying to run away.
Even a runaway prophet. Yeah. Jonah's experience in the belly of the fish
yeah.
is this powerful metaphor for death and resurrection. And it connects me to this larger theme in the Old Testament
okay.
of God's willingness to redeem those who turn back to him.
So no matter how far we stray.
No matter how far we stray.
There's always a path back.
There's always a way back.
Okay, so Jonah's back on dry land.
Back on solid ground.
He's had this intense, life-changing experience.
You'd think he'd be ready to head straight to Nineveh and preach repentance, right?
Right, like, okay, I get it, let's go.
Yeah, sign me up.
Right, I'll do it now.
But remember, this is Jonah, the reluctant prophet.
Oh, right, right, right.
Even after everything he's been through,
yeah.
he still struggles with his mission.
Oh, man.
And this is where we really start to see the psychological and theological depth of this story.
Okay.
It's not a simple tale of obedience or disobedience.
Right.
It's a messy human story.
Yeah.
About a man grappling with doubt, fear, prejudice.
Right.
Maybe even a bruised ego.
So he learned the lesson about God's power.
Yeah.
But maybe he hasn't learned the lesson
about God's mercy.
God's mercy.
Especially when it comes to his enemies.
Especially when it comes to those Assyrians.
Yeah, those Ninevites.
All right, well, what happens next?
Well, that's what we'll find out next time on our deep dive into Jonah. Well, God gives Jonah a second chance.
He does.
Yeah, he tells him again.
Like, go to Nineveh.
Go to Nineveh and preach repentance.
So what does Jonah do?
Well, this time Jonah obeys.
Oh, okay.
He goes to the city.
Okay.
But he's not exactly thrilled about it.
Yeah, you can just imagine
yeah.
the look on his face.
He's like dragging his feet.
Yeah.
He walks through the streets of Nineveh proclaiming, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown.
Yikes.
Not exactly a message of hope and good cheer.
No, not really the guy you want to like bump into on your lunch break.
Right. Not a very welcoming message.
So did anybody even listen to this guy?
You might be surprised to hear this.
Okay.
But Jonah's message had a profound impact.
It did.
Yeah.
What happened?
The people in Nineveh, from the king down to the common people.
Wow, okay.
They took Jonah's words to heart.
Really?
Yeah, they declared a fast, put on sackcloth.
Which is a symbol of?
Which was a symbol of mourning and repentance.
Okay.
And they turned away from their wicked ways.
Wait, so the whole city?
The entire city.
Known for brutality.
Known for its brutality.
Just like had a change of heart.
Underwent a radical transformation.
That's crazy.
It might seem unbelievable.
It does.
But the text emphasizes.
Yeah.
The sincerity and depth of their repentance.
So they really, like...
They got it.
Got it, yeah.
They recognize the error of their ways and humble themselves before God.
Yeah, that's powerful.
It's a really powerful moment.
Yeah.
It challenges our assumptions about who is capable of repentance.
Okay.
And who deserves God's mercy.
Yeah, so are you saying that God spares them?
Well, remember, this is Jonah's story.
Uh-oh.
And things rarely go smoothly for him.
Oh, right, right, right.
So instead of rejoicing... Ooh. Jonah is furious.
Are you serious? He's mad that they repented?
He's mad.
What?
He actually complains to God.
No.
He says, I knew you're a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. That's why I ran away to Tarshish in the first place.
Oh my God.
It's like he's saying, I know you're good God, but I don't want you to be good to them.
It's like almost comical.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But also kind of tragic.
Yeah.
Because he's so stuck in his own worldview.
Yeah, he just can't see
yeah.
the bigger picture.
He's more concerned with being right than with seeing people turn away from evil.
So what does God do about this?
God, in his wisdom, decides to teach Jonah another lesson.
Okay.
This time, it's a lesson about compassion.
All right, how does he do that?
Well, he provides Jonah with a shady vine to shelter him from the scorching heat.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, Jonah's relief.
Yeah, he needs that.
Grateful for the shade.
Yeah, but I bet it doesn't last.
But then overnight, God sends a worm to wither the vine, leaving Jonah exposed and miserable.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Yeah, God asks Jonah, is it right for you to be angry about the vine?
Okay.
And Jonah replies, yes, I am so angry I wish I were dead.
Oh, Jonah.
And then comes the pivotal moment.
What's that?
God says, you have been concerned about this vine, though you did not tend it or make it grow. It sprang up overnight and died overnight. But Nineveh has more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left and many cattle as well. Should I not be concerned about that great city?
So basically, God's saying, you care about a plant.
That lived for a day.
But I care about
an entire city.
Full of people.
Even if they're your enemies.
Wow, that's a pretty clear message.
It's a lesson about God's compassion.
Yeah.
And how it extends beyond our limited perspectives.
So what are, like, the big takeaways from Jonah?
Well, I think it's important to remember that the Bible is full of stories about real people.
Okay.
Who struggled with real issues.
Yeah.
Jonah wasn't a perfect hero.
Right.
He was flawed, just like all of us.
Yeah, he messed up a lot.
But that's what makes his story so relatable.
Right, and it reminds us that God can work through anyone.
Yeah, exactly. Even those who try to run in the opposite direction.
And I think this idea of God's compassion is a big one.
It has no limits.
Right, it's not just for, you know, the good people.
It extends to everyone.
Even our enemies.
Even our enemy.
It's a hard lesson to learn. But I think it's one we need to hear.
Yeah, especially today.
So thank you for taking us on this deep dive into Jonah.
It's been a pleasure.
I think we've all learned a lot. And for our listener, you know, pick up the book.
Read it for yourself.
Yeah. See what you think.
You might be surprised by what you discover.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning.
And keep diving deep.
Yeah.
Yes.